It can be hard to eat healthy during the holidays. With all the prepping and planning and cooking for Thanksgiving, Christmas, and other large family get-togethers, I know firsthand it can be easy to forget to prepare nutritious, healthy meals for yourself. This holiday season, you might be looking for nutritious, convenient meals to keep you energized on jam-packed days. Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal delivery service, can help you fuel up for breakfast, lunch, and dinner with chef-prepared, dietitian-approved, ready-to-eat meals delivered straight to your door. You'll save time, eat well, and stay on track with your healthy lifestyle while tackling all your holiday to-dos. Skip the stress of meal prepping over the holidays with Factor. Choose from 35-plus weekly flavor-packed, fresh, never-frozen meals that support a healthy lifestyle and meet your meal preferences, all delivered right to your door and ready to eat in 2 minutes. With Factor, you can rest assured you're making a sustainable choice. We offset 100% of our delivery emissions and source 100% renewable electricity for our production sites and offices. This November, get Factor and enjoy eating well without the hassle. Simply choose your meals and enjoy fresh, flavor-packed meals delivered right to your door. Ready in just 2 minutes. No prep, no mess. Head to factormeals.com/BA2022pod50 and use code BA2022pod50 to get 50% off. That's code BA2022pod50 at factormeals.com/BA2022pod50 to get 50% off. 2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone. Welcome in to another Baseball America Top 10 Prospects podcast. I'm Kyle Glazer. We are here to break down the Philadelphia Phillies farm system today. And to do that, I am joined by my colleague, Josh Norris. Josh has a lot of history with the Phillies system, did them for a number of years, took a few years off. Now he's back doing their top 10 this season. Josh, first and foremost, thank you for joining me today.
No problem. Yeah, I've done the Phillies a few times early in my tenure here, then moved off of them. And then when our former colleague, Chris Trenkel, took another job, well, you know, I know a lot of the guys who work in their player development department because I'm old enough that I covered them when they were players. So give them a call and talked about some of these guys. And that's kind of put this together on a little bit of a, really quickly, more quickly. I didn't expect to have them this year, but that's how the cookie crumbles sometimes.
Absolutely. Josh, it's pretty obvious the Phillies have a really, really good team in the majors, which is what counts the most. They were one win away from repeating as National League champions this year. It's a stacked lineup. They have some really good pitching. We saw them re-sign Aaron Nola this offseason already. So the big league team is intact and should be competitive for many years to come. But obviously, you always want to have some depth in the farm system, guys you can pull up to help out a little bit. We saw some guys this year like Johan Rojas and Orion Kerkering come up and help in complementary roles. Again, it's always good to have that available. How would you describe the state of the Phillies farm system right now? How would you assess it?
It depends on how you want to look at it. Like, if you are like our boss, JJ Cooper, and you like, top heavy systems with guys with, you know, multiple top, 50, 100 prospects, it's pretty good. It's not the deepest system in the world, but, their top prospect, Andrew Painter, is a little tricky because he's going to miss a lot of time with the Tommy John surgery, but he was among the best pitching prospects in the game before he got hurt, and he had a case as the best pitching prospect in the game before he got hurt, and he did some things that rarely are done by high schoolers, but you're going to have to wait on him. He has a ceiling of top-of-the-rotation guy. Justin Crawford is a really interesting ball player. Like, obviously, he's got some of the same gifts his dad did. And the big hickey on him is clearly that he needs to get the ball in the air more often. But he plays a really good center field, run. And if you can make that change, like, one of my things is, if you have a problem, is it solvable? And I think there are more solvable problems now than in past years. Like, even when I started covering baseball in, 06, through the use of targeted player development, technology, all these things that, getting the ball in the air more often is a solvable problem. And if you've got the ability to hit the ball hard and hit it often, and all you need to do is really change the trajectory, that's still a pretty good foundation with which to work. I mean, nobody comes out of the draft a finished prospect or a finished product is the word I was looking for. So he's got to work on that. But it was a really promising first season.
Yeah, I want to go into Andrew Painter a little bit more. As you mentioned, he entered last year the top pitching prospect in all of baseball. A really, really special talent, 6'7", deep arsenal, throws hard, control, command. It was all there. And there was absolutely the package to dream on, a potential number one type of starter. He hurt his elbow early and ultimately had Tommy John surgery. He will be out, not just, you know, through last year, he's going to be out all of 2024 as well, given the timing of his surgery. By the time he comes back in 2025, he will not have pitched for 3 years. Didn't pitch at all in 23, not going to pitch at all in 24, most likely. What is his outlook now? And ultimately, what kept him as the number one prospect in this farm system, just given the uncertainty, given his injury and the timing of it?
I mean, as far as what his outlook is, we're not supposed to say, I don't know, but I don't know. You know, I don't know what's going on with his rehab. It kind of depends on how that goes. You know, Tommy John surgery is far less of a scary injury than it had been in the past. Not everybody comes back, but a lot of them do. And so we will have to wait to see, you know, what he looks like, what he comes out of it. I am king of the Arizona Fall League. So I am assuming, I'm hoping that he makes it back next year in that particular landscape, but we'll see. It's, you know, what kept him was, you know, if I've learned anything this year, and from our boss again, JJ Cooper, it's that you can stay with guys who have injuries. Like I was inside baseball here. I was pretty hard arguing for Royce Lewis to continually be knocked down our top 100. And, you know, JJ was, you know, he couldn't stay healthy. And JJ was really on it to say, no, we're going to keep it. We're going to keep it. We're going to keep it. JJ looks like he wins that. So I have a hard time knocking the guy down farther than he already was based on, you know, the injury. We did ding him somewhat. He's not like in the super upper echelon at this point. But I have a hard time dinging him any further without any more knowledge of it. And I don't think Crawford's ceiling is higher than Painter's when it's all said and done, if they both reach it. Point is, Painter is still like a really special talent, potentially. You just have to wait a little longer. And I've dealt with these kind of long ones, like, you know, before I gave the Marlin system to our colleague Peter Flaherty, you know, I was still writing up Sixto Sanchez. So I've dealt with these longer injuries before.
Yeah, one thing to keep in mind with Andrew Painter is when he returns in the spring of 2025, he'll still be 22 years old. He'll turn 22 in April of 2025. So he'll still be a 22-year-old pitching prospect who's had double-A time. He'll still be on a good track and on good pace. So I do think, while obviously it's concerning anytime you're going to go two full seasons without throwing a pitch in an official game, there's obviously a lot of talent there. He'll still be young and age appropriate for his levels. And ultimately, we have to see how the stuff comes back, how the command comes back. As you mentioned, Tommy John surgery is not as scary as it once was. But based on research done by John Rogel, who keeps a wonderful Tommy John surgery tracker, you know, he's shown that about 1 in 6 guys who have it don't come back. And obviously, that 5 in 6 who do is certainly an encouraging number. There's always the risk you're that 1 in 6 where just something goes wrong and you can never get right, and you're ultimately not able to get back to the same level you're at before. So that risk does exist, and I think we have to watch and wait and see. But you do make the point that ultimately, given what we know about Andrew Painter, given what he showed talent-wise, given that he'll still be age appropriate, it is understandable to keep him number one in the system. As much as Justin Crawford and McAbel are really good, if you still feel like Andrew Painter has the potential to be the best major leaguer out of all of them, and it sounds like there's a pretty fair consensus that he does. Is that fair to say based on your reporting and talking to individuals in the Philly system?
It's hard to get a consensus on a guy who didn't pitch. You know, there weren't many reports on anybody. Like, you know, with some, like some of these tools grades for the scouting grades, like I didn't change any of them because he didn't do anything past spring training. I can't really tick him up or down based on it, but you know, it's really a wait and see. It's a giant question mark. But I will say this: you made the you reinforced the point that you know, he is going to have the highest ceiling. I don't often use much of what I see in all this stuff. Like, I'm not that person, but I saw Painter's last start in high A. And if you know me, you know my North Star for prospecting is Jose Fernandez. That was the best arm I've seen since Jose, period. It was the most disgusting stuff for like six or something innings where he went two hits, let's say 10 punch outs. He could do whatever he wanted. It was amazing. So that kind of like opened my eyes. I knew this guy was good. He had the pedigree in the draft, but it's another thing when you get him out into pro ball and you see what it looks like, and what it looked like was an ace, not a number one, an ace. So that's what I'm thinking he could become someday. That day just might be a little longer than previously anticipated.
Josh, you mentioned Justin Crawford as the number two prospect in the system. Mick Abel has been number two behind Andrew Painter for a few years now. Ultimately, he and Crawford checked in here at 2-3 with Crawford getting the edge. What ultimately pushed Justin Crawford over Mick Abel, and how close was that debate, if you will?
First off, shout out to my boy Zach Friedman, who signed both of them. Good Duck alum, just like myself, who switched from the Pacific Northwest territory to the Southern California, Las Vegas territory. So I got to rearrange both of his children, as it were. But Mick Abel, the thing with him has always been, like, I've always gotten from scouts, stuff is pretty good, but the command is not the best. And, you know, I understand that the numbers are split a little bit this year. Like, if you take the home road splits out of the or into the equation, he's way better away from Reading than he was, you know, at Reading, which is not unusual for pitchers. That's a bit of a bandbox. And if you get the ball anywhere in the air, you're in trouble. But, you know, even the Phillies do acknowledge that in zone command is something he's going to be tightening up or needs to tighten up in order to achieve his ceiling at the highest level. And to do that, they're going to make some mechanical alterations. But that's been on his, an action item for him for the past couple of years, even before I had this system again. So that was my thing with him, was like, it's a considerable problem that's been kind of there. I think it's kind of reflected in the stuff grades that I have. I've got really hot stuff grades on him, but the control is below average. So that might be more of the issue that I saw. Whereas Crawford, he showed a lot of skills on both sides of the ball. Like I said earlier, the one real thing that was a problem was where he was hitting the ball. But if he gets it, you know, at line drives or fly balls, you're going to have a really, really interesting ball player.
Yeah, again, a player who has a lot of physical projection left, who's already getting bigger. I was really impressed in seeing the physical gains he'd already made, seeing him in the Futures game, and I'd seen him in high school. So you're seeing that trend the right direction. And look, I know people don't love batting average much anymore, but to hit 344 in the Florida State League is nothing short of remarkable. He's a really, really good hitter. We see the speed. You saw the center field defense, which we all knew was there. As he continues to get bigger and stronger, I think we'll see a player who can impact the ball more. And again, home runs are not going to be his game, but a lot of doubles, a lot of hard line drives, and he could end up being a really good ball player like his dad. Going back to Abel, you mentioned the walks, and for his career in the minor leagues, he's just under 5 walks per 9. He doesn't give up a lot of hits. Like you said, he's tough to hit when he throws strikes, but the strikes have not always been there, or the quality of strikes have not always been there. You mentioned some of the mechanical alterations. Where do the Phillies feel like the issue is? How much of it's physical versus mental, and how fixable do they think it is?
Part of it, you know, is going to be getting stronger in his lower half, which I assume that's fixable. I don't purport to know how his body responds. I know there's, you know, some guys that just can't put on weight to save their lives. And part of it is shortening the arm action. So those are two kind of action items for him this offseason. And if he can get better with those things, then you might see a better, you know, bigger volume and quality of strikes, which is what he needs to do without sacrificing his stuff. Like, if you look at the scouting grades I have on there, everything's above average. The control is below. So it's really a matter of getting the pitches in the zone more often and in quality spots in the zone more often.
Josh, as you filled out the top half of this top 10, one of the names that really jumped out this year at the lower levels was Starlin Cava. There are some really interesting young Latin American talents at the lower levels of the Philly system, but even just among that group, he got a lot of buzz. A lot of evaluators, both inside and outside the Phillies organization, were excited with what they saw from him. He's 17 years old, signed out of the Dominican, was only in the DSL this year. So there's a long, long, long way to go, but a lot of really, really good reviews early. What are people seeing there and what has them so excited?
I mean, didn't see much because he got hurt. He played 38 games and then needed elbow surgery. But so you're going a little bit on track record more than, in-game performance, which, but when he was there, you know, he hit strikes. He hit strikes hard too. I put in here that in his 164 plate appearances, according to the data we have, he missed at just a 9.5% rate and in zone at just a 4.2% rate, which is stunning at just about any level of the minor leagues. He didn't hit the ball as hard as you'd like, but he's also 17 years old and he didn't hit it, you know, really softly either. So there's projection remaining. He can play shortstop. Unfortunately, you didn't get to see as much of him as you want, but, you know, he's a guy, I think our colleague, Jeff Ponce, had said, that when he was down in the FCL, some people said, you know, this is a guy to watch. He's going to be one of our better guys in our system. So that's kind of where I settled on at five. And if you followed me over the last decade at Baseball America, you know I'm pretty aggressive with young Latin guys. It's kind of my my hallmark. Those are my huckleberries. So I kind of put him there at five. And I think his upside is the best of the second tier of this system, the non-Abels and Crawfords and Painters.
All right, Josh, so as we talked about, the top half of this system certainly has some guys who were high draft picks, big bonus guys, players that there is considerable upside, at least in the eyes of evaluators inside and outside the organization. The back half of this top 10 and the rest of the system is a little bit lighter. This is not the deepest system in the world, as you alluded to early on. I want to talk about some of these players with you here. We're going to take a quick break and dive right in. All right, welcome back to the Phillies Top 10 Prospects Podcast. I am Kyle Glazer alongside Josh Norris. All right, Josh, before the break, we talked a lot about Andrew Painter, Mick Abel, Justin Crawford, you know, guys who were first-round picks, a lot of pedigree, and have seen time on the top 100. Starlin Cava got $3 million to sign internationally, had a really good pro debut. So these are some of the bigger bonus or bigger-named guys who were expected to be good and, to their credit, have delivered on that promise. The Phillies do not have the deepest farm system, and this is where you do see a bit of a drop-off once you get past the top five or so. You have Orion Kerkring here, and he obviously shot right up to the majors, contributed out of the bullpen late in the year and in the postseason, certainly has a role on the Philly staff moving forward and is a really good player. But outside of him, you're looking at a lot of really, really, really young guys who are very far away and just not a ton of depth in this system overall. Take me through kind of how you assess the overall talent pool here outside of that top group we talked about. Is it stronger position players versus pitchers? What do you kind of see here with the rest of this system?
You know, up top, it's up the middle talent, which if you're going to have a thinner system, you do want to be strong in those areas. You notice the rest of the system is, besides Kerkering, catcher Eduardo Tait, and a couple shortstops and William Bagoya Jr. and Brian Rincon, who are pretty interesting little players. Rincon is a really, really good defender who was better than the bat with the bat than expected early, especially at Jersey Shore, where it's not exactly the best atmosphere to hit. Bagoya, a little lighter with the bat than you'd like, but also can really play the position. So those guys I kept up top. Tait played almost all year at 16, I believe. I think he turned 17 in the middle of the playoffs. And still really produced, which, you know, age in context, those are really kind of watchwords for me. I was really impressed with the performance considering the age and the position. So I kept him up there, played some upside cards, as it were. And then, you know, it does fall off a little bit. I was really struggling at 10. I went with Gabriel Rincones because he does have pretty big power. He did, I think, decently well in the fall league. And you get a little bit of a pass because he was dealing with injuries early in his career that might have that kept him off the field and kind of stilted his performance a little bit, also in college. So that was kind of the way I went with that one. But then you're dealing with some guys who are coming back with injuries, like Christian McGowan, kind of an interesting, really heavy sinker guy who was coming back from Tommy John surgery. Other guys, Griff McGarry is good stuff, really, really bad control and command. Like, it's a delivery overhaul situation. Like what I said about Mick Abel, it's like take that and multiply it by like three. Like he needs to go back to the drawing board because it's just not working. He's just not throwing strikes with anywhere near the quantity you want. There are some other interesting names later in the system. Carlos De La Cruz obviously has ridiculous power. There are questions about defensive home and the frequency of contact. But, you know, there's, like I said, there's other interesting guys in the system, but it is not the deepest system in sport.
Yeah, I was going to mention McGarry. You know, he's someone that the stuff has always opened eyes, but he really struggled to throw strikes at Virginia. We saw signs of progress in 2022 and then just went backwards in 2023. Walked 7.5 per 9. Once he got to AAA, especially, it was bad. 14 walks, only 5 strikeouts and 4 1/3 innings. What happened there? Why did it go backwards? And how fixable is it?
We will find out. They are, again, like I said, doing delivery overhaul, and they worked a lot with him on inside sessions and bullpens. And it's going to be a matter if he takes to a new delivery. Like I said, shorter arm action, trying to just make him a little more consistent through the arm stroke. But yeah, it needs to get better. I think starting is almost out of the question. So this is probably a reliever. And I don't know, unless he, if the stuff comes back intact, you're looking at a really good reliever. If not, I really don't know what he is. It's just a really, it's got to be frustrating because that stuff when it's on is really, really good, but it's not on often enough. And if you can eliminate pretty much everything as a hitter from being in the strike zone, especially if you're going to be in AAA where they're going to have the auto strike zone 3 days a week, you're going to be in real trouble. And we all know, well, we all assume that some version of the auto strike zone is going to be in the big leagues at some point. And that's going to make it really tricky for guys who rely on chases and maybe inconsistency of umpires to do their thing going forth.
Yeah, absolutely. One other player who was a somewhat high draft pick a few years ago, Ethan Wilson. He was a top 50 overall pick in 2021, drafted right after Andrew Painter for the Phillies. Was a top 10 prospect in the system for some time, did not perform very well last year at AA Reading, which is always a red flag when an offensive player doesn't perform all that great there because it's one of the most hitter friendly environments in the minor leagues. What's the status on him?
He's taken a hit. I mean, he had, he doesn't have a whole lot of support from scouts either internally or externally. It doesn't sound like he has really a plus tool at all on the card. He showed a little bit more power at some point during the year. But if you don't hit for a fair amount of home runs at Reading, I don't know what to say. Like, that is a real bandbox. It's kind of like the same idea we have out here in Greensboro, where, you know, it's a pitcher's worst nightmare and a hitter's dream. So it's not going to be real high up in the 30 for Wilson. There's nothing that really jumps off the card for him.
Yeah, I will say, you know, even if that one doesn't work out, I think one encouraging thing for the Phillies is they have drafted well in recent years. And for a long time, they didn't draft well. There was a stretch there of about 10, 12 years where, I mean, the only good picks they really had were Aaron Nola and Rhys Hoskins. And to be clear, those were two huge, huge wins. But when you look at a stretch of about 10 or so years, you only have one or two homegrown draft picks that have really worked out for you. It's not great. There was that stretch where they had 4 straight top 10 picks. They went Cornelius Randolph, Mickey Moniak, Adam Haseley with the first 3 of them. Wasn't great. But what we've seen more recently has been an upturn. You go back and look, you know, this first round picks since 2018, it's Alec Bohm, Bryson Stott, both of whom are starters on a team that's a contender to go to the World Series every year, and productive starters. Followed up with Mick Abel, Andrew Painter, Justin Crawford, all of whom have moved into the top 100. So the last 5 drafts, well, I should say 6, we have to see what Aiden Miller does, but the Phillies were one of the worst drafting organizations in baseball for a while, and they actually have moved into being one of the better ones recently. Just what are you seeing overall trends in their scouting, their player development? There's been a lot of turnover there. New farm director, new scouting director. What are you seeing from this organization, and what do you think they're doing well?
You know, one thing I noticed when Brian Barber took over their scouting department is their first couple picks were Abel and Painter. And, well, you know, some of the red flags usually are high school right-hander and tall. Well, you picked a 6'5" and a 6'7" high school right-hander with your first picks back-to-back years, and you've been rewarded for it so far. I mean, nothing's finished yet. Obviously, not as great as last year, but those look like two really good picks. If you're going to shoot for upside, that's how you do it. You know, sometimes those guys, even when if they don't help your big league club, they show enough upside in the minor leagues to be valuable in trade. So if you can use those guys to, and we know Dave Dombrowski is not one to shy away from trading his guys, and he's pretty shrewd at keeping the ones that are really good. If you can use those guys, you can maximize guys with high upside in the minor leagues and capitalize them at what you believe to be the peak of their upside, then those are the kind of prospects you want in your system. So you know, they've gone from, you know, less safe picks, bats like Adam Haseley and, Adam Haseley mostly was a, a safer type pick. Mickey Moniak was safe-ish, allegedly, pick at the top. Now, granted, he's come into his own a little bit in Los Angeles, but they've seemed to have shot for more upside. And if you're me, if you ask me how you want to do it, that's kind of how I'd play it pretty much all the time, especially if you're picking toward the back, shoot for upside and see what happens. And if you can capitalize on it, both on your big league club or through trades, I see that as a win-win.
Absolutely. All right, Josh, as we wrap up the top 10 here, again, you mentioned a few players who were kind of on the cusp in consideration, but fell off a little bit from reaching that top 10 threshold. Just as we wrap up, any final thoughts on this system, this organization, and what to look for moving forward? Because again, this is a team that you look at the pieces in place should continue to contend for National League pennants and World Series titles. And, they don't need a super deep farm system. They just need a few guys to come up and help them. And it seems like they're in a good place.
Yeah. I mean, they've got some pieces that'll help them long-term. They've got an ownership group that is willing to do what it takes to supplement the big league roster when it needs to. They've got, some really good character guys. I'm sure a lot of people are going to disagree with me. This Bryce Harper leading that club. They've got a lot of really fun things in store, and they just spent the money to retain Aaron Nola. They've got some interesting guys in their farm system too, beyond the ones that we talked about. Devin Saltaban is really interesting, especially considering they moved him to shortstop. And, it's funny because, like I said, I wasn't super familiar with this system after having not done it for, 5-6 years. So when I'm reading Carlos Collazo, our draft guy's report, it's like, wait a minute. He's listed as a shortstop, but doesn't mention shortstop at all in the report. So they've moved him. They saw him like some very small amount as an amateur, and they moved him over there. So they're going to try to make the most upside out of that too. Samuel Aldegari is kind of an interesting name on the pitching side that they said, keep an eye on. Who else do I? Oh, Raylan Heredia kind of popped in the FCL. He was on our FCL top 20. Not quite a top 10 guy, but there's an interesting set of tools right there. Looking through my notes here, I love Taits, like we said. Those are the main. Oh, Alec, well, you have to wait a little longer with Alex McFarlane. Wenhui Pan is pretty interesting too. Probably a straight reliever profile. Caleb Ricketts had some fans early in the season. Got hurt. Looking at else, who else we got here? Yeah, those are the names that are really popping right now. So it's not the deepest system in the world, but it's certainly not the worst system in the world. It's a middling system, and we didn't even really touch on Kirkering, who, he was really good and has a chance to be a late inning reliever for a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, have a few pieces come up and make an impact. That's all this team needs. This is an organization in a really good place, and we'll see if they're able to continue their run here of being one of the top teams in the National League. Josh, thank you so much for joining me today. We really appreciate your insight as always.
Yep, thank you much.
All right, everyone, that'll do it for another Top 10 Prospects podcast. Go ahead and give us a review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, whatever platform you're listening on. We would love to hear from you. For Josh Norris, I'm Kyle Glazer. Thanks for listening. Have a good one.